It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And my name is Joey. That's Len. Buddy, what's going on? How are you?
Very good, man. Busy day, but very good. How about you?
Very good. I am off now for the better part of 2 weeks. I got some travel next week for the Bitcoin conference, some other stuff going on. So looking forward to that. Yeah, busy. Couple of weeks coming up here, but it's okay. No problem. We'll still be here doing the show, still be here with the latest in cybersecurity issues. We got a fun story to lead off today, but first we'll start with the quote from last week. People who think they know everything are a great annoyance to those of us who do. That was by Isaac Asimov. Bill got it. Congrats. I haven't read the Asimov books. I'd like to. I have Foundations at the house. I've never actually read it though. This week's quote: the object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. Don't forget, you can only look at the cracked spines of books you've owned for 30 years or more to find the answer. No Googling. And if you get it right, you get your next round of renewals on Mark and the team. Speaking of Mark, first story this week. Mark got a fake phone call. I guess it was a real phone call? A real phone call from someone impersonating a detective in the Toronto Police Service. Can you believe it? An 808 number, which usually signifies that it's a Toronto Police Service's outgoing, claimed they had a laptop, Len, with information on it tied back to Mark Jeftovic. What would you have done in that situation?
Given them everything I have, because obviously if they have a laptop that has my information, I'm cooked. What are they going to have? You know, my laptop, not only does it have a very hard password to get into it, it's encrypted. I really don't care if somebody gets access to my laptop. And there's nothing, it's not like there's my Bitcoin keys on it. if something happened like this to me, it's like, whatever. I just down a laptop.
If I was Mark, I would have been asking what was on it. What information do you have? Anything good? Anyway, the suggestion is to tell the caller that you'll get the TPS switchboard instead and have them reconnect your call. And that throws them off, I guess. But interesting that these guys are able to call from numbers that represent what's typically a police service line. So the 808 is like the outgoing line. And then if you're, for example, in the 52nd division, it'll be 5200. So 808-5200, which was the number that called Mark. Interesting stuff, man. You got to be careful. I bet you people get nuked by that. The geezers get one-shotted and send $1,000 cash to get the laptop back. Out of the evidence lockup.
Maybe. How many of them have a laptop? They probably are using the 310 Dell computer from the 1990s. It's like, what do you mean? Laptop? I'm still using a desktop.
Yeah, maybe.
One, baby.
Maybe. Anyway, yeah. So there you go. Keep an eye out for that. What else do you want to talk about? What other stories we got?
India, buddy. India.
What else is new over there? Okay.
There, it's here.
It's actually there
because they're rolling out a new biometric authentication for instant digital payments. This is going to be nuts. The National Payment Corporation of India, NPCI, it's a new biometric authentication, and it's going to be using the Unified Payments Interface, UPI, that's within India, and that's going to enable instant payments. And this began around October 8th, just yesterday. And it's going to be with pinless transactions. How could one make a transaction without pins? Well, they're going to be using fingerprints or facial recognition as a way to authenticate you. And so no reason to enter the pins every time you want to do a transaction. And how do they store this information is biometric information. The government of India is going to have a unique identification system that's going to store it and ensure every transaction is tied to the individual. So they're going to make sure that when there's ever a query, they're going to do the verification and make sure it's correct. I don't know, man. I don't buy this. I know the Reserve Bank of India, they're trying to make it harder for people to do some nefarious stuff with this. But let's be honest, now you're trusting the government to not only run an operation, a very sophisticated one at that, but beyond that, they're going to hold all the information. And let's be honest, how many people have gone online, and watched a video of scammers. And I'm not going to say where did these scammers originate from, but if they are originating from the area which this is being stored and dealt with, I can just imagine this is.
You can't say private. You can't say that. You can't. Say
I'm
that.
Not saying anything. I mean, people are drawing the lines here, trying to connect dots.
Oh God!
Right? Like, what is it?
What is it with these people and trying to digitize my information all the time to get me to bend the knee and not do what they don't want? Like this is the common theme on this program now. Everywhere I look, there's something that's going to make it harder for me to be an independent human being. I'm tied to the government, tied to my fingerprint, tied to my face, tied to my digital ID. I hate it. I hate this story. You know what the weirdest thing, though, is? There's a ton of people in India. Like, the scale of this project is about as big as you could ever imagine. Like, there's probably no worse country to pilot this in than India.
Yeah, well...
there's parts of India that are like living 200 years behind the rest of the world.
Correct.
Like, how are they going to do this?
They'll still not, they won't use this. This is going to be people that are at more advanced using modern tools, crap like that. Still a lot of people. Like, if you're doing 3% of 1.5 billion or whatever.
It's tons.
It's still a lot of people, but, you know, to be perfectly honest, there's going to be a lot of people that are within India that won't be captured for this initially. Is there still, how many people are still do barter system over? I've been there, man. I could tell you firsthand that things are interesting over there. Great experience, but dirty water.
Let's move on.
You don't want to hear my story about how I came back and how sick I got? No, we don't want to. I'm thankful because I got really sick. And I'm thankful I wasn't stuck at the airport like a whole bunch of people were because of the CBSA outage over not too long ago. It's September 28th. There was a technical issue, not a cyber attack, that impacted the CBSA primary inspection kiosk, the PIK. And that created long delays for people trying to enter both air and land. Initially, it was just air, but then it went on to the land. So Toronto Pearson International Airport, Billy Bishop, Montreal's Trudeau Airport, Calgary, like these are like hubs, more so Toronto, but the other ones too, they're hubs for international flights
in Canada. Yeah. There's only so many. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then people are coming in, they're coming in on a Sunday, tired, ready to do, they want to get ready to start work Monday. And they had to endure these long hours for people because the systems didn't work. They had to manually process all travelers and shipments that are coming in. And that's a very time consuming. And you know what? I think maybe things may have been overlooked through the process. I can't guarantee it, but who the heck knows? All I know is this was not a cyber attack, just a technical issue. And they have alerted the people within Shared Services Canada to strengthen the contingency plans so that if this ever happens again, see what's going on. Also, there's going to be a full report given to the Minister of Public Safety within 30 days to say what has happened, and hopefully this won't happen again. I feel so bad for people out there. This some people, like the truckers even.
Yeah.
Truckers coming in, 38-hour delays in some cases. Imagine how sneaky some of those cabs got. Let's leave it at that.
Do you believe them when they say it wasn't a cyber attack?
You know what? I do, because it could be just incompetence.
I'm not sure I believe that it wasn't a cyber attack, but you're right. I think there's plenty of room for failure for other reasons in those systems. It's noted in the newsletter that Mark and the team are betting that it was a DNS issue. But the big thing for me is, again, there's a lack of what is the most diplomatic way to put this? There is a lack of attention and care paid where other people's time is concerned, So how do you compensate people who are delayed by hours and hours and hours, or miss a flight or miss a hookup or had a trip shortened by this failure? The answer is they didn't do anything, right? They don't compensate you at all. There's no laws around this, as far as I can tell. There are laws around flight delays and things like that, but not around delays for this type of stuff. So it's frustrating, because I'm going to be flying a couple times over the next 7 or 8 days, and I'm totally at the mercy of the airport. These systems that are 100 years old and people who are not necessarily interested in making sure I have the best experience, right? Which is frustrating.
It's not like you have any options, right?
You can't. Exactly. You're stuck.
Yeah. There's no competitor out there. Like, no. Well, come with us. We'll give you a better experience at a fraction of the cost. Don't exist.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a bad experience. What's going on with these Chinese hackers, and they're using a open source NISA tool to NISA. Maybe I butchered it anyways. Sure. It's the way they've done this, this open source tool and how to weaponize this is incredible. And they do this by running tools called PHP MindMin to trick logs and doing log poisoning. It's basically tricking a server into writing malicious codes in its own log file. Mm-hmm. And when it does that, it does it in a way that the server treats it as an executable, essentially planting a secret within the computer, an invisible backdoor, creating a web shell. And once they have the option to get in, Bob's your uncle, they could get all the information. They could snoop the networks. They could steal information. They could run these remote access Trojans. I'm just like amazed that they were able to do this. They were able to do this log poison. I found that to be rather unique. I love to hear these stories. And it seems to be like you have these people that they put these protections in place, try to protect their computers, servers, all this stuff. And then there's these novel ways of the way to try to attack it. And it's like a cat and mouse type situation where you think you have it secure. They find a new way to get around it. And just using simple logs, just simply your computer just logging stuff and turning that into executables, malicious executables. I found it to be brilliant, but I don't know. I know that the computers that were compromised were mostly in Asia. We're talking about Taiwan, Japan, and South Korea. So if you are in Western part of the world and you are thinking you might be attacked, probably not. So keep that in mind.
Do you think this is a concern for, like, I don't want to just point to this story, although this story is obviously the one top of mind. It feels to me like this is not a concern for most like home users, I don't think. Like, what reason would the Chinese have to run a Russian dashboard on my computer via a log file over, like a log file write? I don't know what you call it, overwrite, probably not. But I don't think this is a concern for most people. Some of the stuff we talk about here, like, you know, these gaps in patchwork software updates and failures in the SharePoint suite of programs and stuff like that. Those are things that affect everybody. This one, not so much. It doesn't seem. It looks like over 100 machines were compromised in the attack. 100, not that many.
But think about it through a different lens. Like,
okay,
now if you're potentially a country that's starving for currency to come in, like North Korea, mm-hmm. then using this and deploying this on every computer possible makes sense, because how many people make online purchases using their computers? I would say a fair number.
Everybody, yeah.
And then so that information is stored locally. And if that information could then be retrieved and used as a way to try to extract funds from you and maybe buy, say, Bitcoin and send it over there, and there's nothing to stop it, it makes it for a valuable tool for certain countries to increase their wealth. Like, they're starving for cash. Starting for any type of wealth. This gives them an opportunity to do it. Who knows? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's just a new way of doing it. So I don't say that it's only going to be doing certain types of people or servers or whatever. I think anybody could be impacted as long as the computer is vulnerable.
Well, the other thing too is that this NESA thing is open source.
Yes.
You know, like, that's another kind of wrinkle here. If you're grabbing something off Git, you're really putting a lot of faith in the GitHub contributors, right? If you can't read any of the stuff that's in there, then I don't know. Like, to me, the open source thing, tons of value there, obviously, for a number of reasons, many of which we've discussed on the show. But it seems to me like we're seeing, you know, an uptick in the number of open source projects that are being targeted.
Let's talk about more people being targeted. This Guelph woman.
I love this story.
She lost a lot of money.
Idiot.
Because of a fake Doug Ford cryptocurrency ad.
Oh, should I feel sorry for this person? Do you feel sorry for this person? Okay. Continue reading the story, and then we'll talk about what we should or shouldn't feel.
If you've been got by this, clearly you're not the smartest individual. $90,000 was lost. $90,000 USD was lost. So she has lots of liquidity available to her. So, right? If somebody comes to me and says, I need 90,000 US dollars, right? There's no way I'm going to get it. It would take me a while to get that, right? So clearly she's got some means to her. And then the scam all began with a social media advertisement. And it was falsely claiming that Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, was launching a new cryptocurrency intended to help Canadians. And believing that this ad was real, she thought this thing was legitimate, she made an initial investment, $350. Then she was contacted by the people representing the investment firm, and they encouraged her to invest more because, you know, this is going to go to the moon. And then, well, it's $90,000 US later. So scammers told her that she'd have to pay $1,000 in fees to get her access to her. It's like, I love this stuff. And then the Gulf police were informed, but at that point, it's you know.
Len, how did she get to 90K?
How did she get to give up?
How did she get to 90K?
From 350 to 90.
You know, $350. It's a big jump.
It sure is. Right? So like, yeah. And they could do all kinds of scams. You've heard a lot of these in the past where they give you this fake chart and, wow, your investment, it tripled in value.
I want to see AI Doug Ford that was part of this scam probably, right? Must have been an AI video.
If there wasn't a cheesecake in the background, it is fake. It's got it. Right? Remember he was doing the cheesecake cooking it or creating?
Of course I remember. During COVID, yeah.
I was dreaming that then.
Maybe no. There was a lot of fever dreams had in that period of time, but that was not everybody. That was real.
Interesting time. Cheesecake Dougie.
You know what's funny about this story? This is an argument that you and I have had on the other show that we cheat on Mark with for a number of years at this point about what the government can and can't do in terms of tracking who's got what on the blockchain. I'm going to read you this quote, and I find this quite interesting. Cryptocurrency scams are very difficult to investigate, and the odds of recovering losses are almost nil. How can that be? Those like most tokens have an exit point, especially if it's like a scam token somehow, like it's on one of these exchanges. So they can't find this, you know, like, are they kind of giving up the game here a little bit? Like if you're able to get your Bitcoin or whatever onto a foreign exchange, transfer it to Doug Ford token and then sell it for USD somewhere else, you're safe. Is that the message they're sending here?
If you do it, I don't want to give any.
It looks like that though. Does it?
It
not?
Is because if you're going to theoretically, you have Bitcoin, you want to change it to something else. You don't have to use ShakePay or whoever else.
No,
you could go and just find, like, for example, if I have Lightning and I want to convert that to on-chain Bitcoin, I could do that without anybody knowing.
Yeah,
there's websites. The same applies to this. If you want to change it to Bitcoin or whatever, you could do it. And there's no identification you're providing aside from your IP. Now, could you hide your IP? If you think yes, and I would agree with that.
Yeah, there are ways.
Right. So it's impossible to find it then.
Interesting.
And then even if they know that, you changed one for the other, all they just know is the amount. As for the addresses, it's... Forget about it, man. Like this, there's no way to, like, for somebody that is a right, it's impossible to find. It's just a lost cause.
Other thing I want to point out, unrelated to the story, the reporter Heather Senaran calls herself on her tagline a multi-skilled journalist. Interesting. Something to consider, I guess. Multi-skilled journalist. You ever call yourself a multi-skilled podcaster?
Multi-skilled nothing. I'm uni-skilled. Barely. And I can show you why, because if I was multi-skilled and I was, you know, doing a lot with Discord, maybe I would have been impacted by this, because there was a Discord data breach involving one of their third-party customer services, and it didn't directly compromise Discord's core platform. So their Discord's internal servers, they're fine, but it's their external customer service providers. Reportedly, there's ones who manage support tokens. There was a breach, and it was a small number of users, a subset of users that were impacted. They were contacting Discord's customers support for some assistance. And this all happened in September 20th. So if you were contacting Discord's customer support service back September 20th, give or take around that time, you might have been impacted. So not all of the 200 plus million Discord users, that's a lot of users, were
impacted. Lot of people,
They do. Yeah. And so they're trying to escort the people that impacted or that got the information a financial ransom from Discord. And they say that what was taken here was from a small number of people was government issued photo identifications like driver's license and passports, and also personal information like names and Discord usernames, email addresses, and stuff like that. Billing information, who the heck's buying anything on Discord anyways, is not impacted. It wasn't
a lot of people buy stuff on Discord. Like you can run. Yeah, I'll give you an example of how. You and me have a Discord server for CBP, which people should be joining, by the way. And you can buy upgrades to like your server. So if I want to have people able to upload bigger videos, bigger images, more access to certain features like scheduling, live streams, etc., you can do it, but it costs a monthly fee. So that's what people are doing. There's been a development here in the last, 24 hours. I don't know when Tracy Maria got this story, but interesting stuff here. The unauthorized party is posting the size of the leaks on the dark web. They're huge. It's more than 2 million, like you said. And there's some, at least on Twitter, there was earlier, I'm having trouble finding them now, leaks of people holding their IDs in front of them in the photo. Nice. Right? It's a pretty common way to verify, right? I know a lot of different websites use that method now. And those pictures are out there. Have fun with that. In the age of AI, now you have a face, a voice, an ID, all online, all for the low price of a couple of bucks, probably per item, if that. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this develops. And I just would say to people, like, you have to be so careful with who you give your data to, because as this story shows, and as we talked about before, this wasn't a Discord leak. It was a vendor that had the problem that ended up leaking the Discord security stuff that people are submitting, right? Unbelievable. It just happens over and over again.
I've talked about in-house, keeping everything within house is the way to go. And this is another example why you don't want to have a third party get access to anything, because then it's another point of failure in the chain. And they say that affected users, they're going to be notified by email from a specific email address, noreply@discord.com. Mm. So if you're going to, I don't know. Those people that got in
next week, it's a preview of next week's story. People didn't notice that the O and no was a zero. And now there's another 2 million. They all sent back the secret numbers on the back of their credit card.
Remember when ISIS was doing their thing back then and they had Jihadi John? Right, he was doing talking with the knife. They got to get Discord John to come out here and just slice the
oh my god, I can't believe it. It's the other bad thing is that this happened 2 weeks ago. Like, 2 weeks is a long time to be not saying much, I guess. I mean, Discord, I haven't seen their official release, but my guess is they're saying, oh, we're weighing the size of the leak and deciding what to do next and securing the data, blah blah blah. Like, not good. Just talk to yourself. That's the answer, is to talk to yourself in the bathroom and not worry about what other people online are saying. That way you never have to join an online community. What else can you really say?
Yeah, don't trust anyone.
That's it.
Let's
get out of here. Good show. Thanks for coming, everybody. Don't forget, subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, the YouTube channel, of course. You can see our smiling faces, and the newsletter at accessofeasy.com. All the latest and greatest into data breaching. These retainers are killing me, and overreaching every week direct to your mailbox. Until next time, take care of yourself.
And give Doug Ford some more of your Bitcoin.